Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Tuesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on another beautiful day. A little bit warmer than it's been. Enjoy it, folks. It is really, really nice outside. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew's back at the controls. We're going to check in with the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, here momentarily. So we'll get with him and get his thoughts on Auburn's season opening win last night in overtime over Bethune-Cookman. Man, that was, it was an entertaining game. Bethune-Cookman, if they play like that, and I understand they didn't have their best player.
Dr. Bradley sat out. Yeah, the guy was a preseason all-conference.
Yeah, let me tell you,
the SWAC.
That was an impressive team last night, and I know Stephen Pearl was saying after the game, hey, they did some things Auburn wasn't expecting. They shot it a lot better than Auburn had expected. But they also, they took it to Auburn inside. They really... challenged Auburn at the rim last night.
The hot shooting can vary. You know, I know Stephen Pearl mentioned that. We previewed the game on the Observer podcast, Justin Ferguson and I did, and we talked about how, some of Bethune's best players didn't necessarily project as great outside shooters. Auburn,
they go 12 for 22. Yeah,
sort of dares them to win from the three-point line, and Bethune does exactly that. And I think that with – We'll see what happens with the perimeter defense this year.
Yeah, we will. It is definitely a question right now.
To me, it was a given that you're going to miss the rim protection of Jani Broome and Dylan, and now you're seeing what the next era of the Auburn front court looks like, and I think they could improve, but. I mean, it reminds you that what Auburn had last year was really, really special in a couple of categories. And one of the things that made last year's team so dangerous was it was very tough to score at the rim against last year's team. Between the intensity of the perimeter defenders and what you had guarding the basket, guarding the rim, it just made things really difficult every single time a team tried to run their offense to the basket. And it's so I think that we'll see. I think Hall and Murph both seem. I mean they both seem not even legitimate starters. They seem like very, very good additions.
Oh, they are
to a rebuilding
they
team.
They are. And last night I thought early on Keyshawn Murphy was by far he was the best player on the court for Auburn.
Yeah.
I mean he really.
Trying to shake off the effects of that injury too, which makes that even more incredible.
And then Keyshawn Hall, I mean, he's going to score. He's going to get his points. There's no way around it. He makes shots and he draws fouls, so he is going to score. Now, he's got to get better defensively, because he gave up some last night as well. But I mean, it was fun to watch last night,
The front court in general probably needs to get better defensively too, because when they went
I think overall Auburn's got to get better defensively, and Stephen Pearl, you could tell when he talked about reverting back to some of the things that they did against Oklahoma State that there will be more emphasis, much more emphasis placed. Not that there hasn't been, but there will be a good bit more emphasis placed defensively.
We've done this before, and we'll loop Andy Burcham in on this conversation. When you have a close call against a team that you were supposed to beat handily,
right?
Like, yes, it's a sigh of relief. Like you get to exhale, and you get to come away from that game winning, and you do get to show the adversity. Like you do get to show that the character, the backbone.
Oh, yeah.
They
had to. I mean, there's no question. Auburn played better defensively down the stretch. If they hadn't, they would have lost that ball game.
Right. Like it came down to a direct challenge, and Auburn had enough.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, right, you look at the schedule and think, well, there's – and Stephen Pearl even mentioned it in the postgame. There are a lot of really good teams, bigger and badder, mm-hmm. I think was how he described it, on the Auburn schedule. And so you're fortunate, right? You're certainly relieved that you start the season 1-0 and you preserve that long non-conference home winning streak, which was also in jeopardy last night as the game, by the way the game goes to overtime, Bill.
Oh, you wanna- yeah. No kidding. And Auburn did everything they could. I mean, hey, that was a foul for people. I mean, there were some people going, oh, what a terrible call. It's like, no, that was a foul.
I mean, it was
you got to credit the kid for, I mean, Auburn uses a timeout. They make substitutions. They did everything to try to, throw him off. And he just coolly sank all three free throws to send it to OT. Let's bring in our regular Tuesday guest here to get things started. And that, of course, is the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham. Andy, how you doing today?
Beautiful day. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous day on the plains. I'm glad to be with y'all.
Absolutely is.
Maybe a little more gorgeous after the team starts 1-0, Andy. Fantastic job. I was on the call for Troy last night. I got to hear most of the second half and overtime of what turned into a thriller of a first game of the season. What a debut for Stephen Pearl as Auburn holds off Bethune.
I can't say that I expected that one last night.
No.
To be honest. Hats off to Bethune-Cookman and Reggie Theus. I had his ball club ready to play. And that team did not come in looking like it was at all concerned about a team that had gone to the Final Four the year before. They played well. I thought early in the ball game, they really used the baseline to their credit, especially in the first half and early in the second half. And to Auburn's credit, after a 7-for-16 performance from the free throw line in the first half, I think my math is correct, from halftime and through overtime, Auburn was 20-of-22
right
from the free throw line. So that improved dramatically. And Bill, you mentioned it. Down the stretch of regulation and in overtime, Auburn got some big defensive stops. Kevin Overton is the guy that comes to my mind.
No doubt.
With some huge defensive stops for Auburn. And listen, that's his MO. That's part of his game, is defense. And Auburn was able to get to those. But as you mentioned, Bill, you know, they hit a big three to cut a 4-point lead down to 1. Auburn comes down, hits 2 free throws, and then get off the shot with a half second to go just inside midcourt. And the young man steps to the line and nails all 3. And we go to overtime. I thought Auburn played better in the overtime period than Bethune-Cookman. But there's a lot to work on coming out of that ballgame. You mentioned it. Stephen mentioned it on the postgame with us over on Wings 94.3 that Auburn reverted back from a defensive standpoint to the Oklahoma State game, and it was a little bit different. In Oklahoma State, they were penetrating basically from the top of the key. I thought they were penetrating a great deal last night on the baseline, and there was some straight-line drives, as you heard Randall Dickey talk about that during the broadcast. But there were a lot of things I liked about it. I love the play of Sebastian Williams-Adams in that game. That game was not too big in his college debut. I was also encouraged with the play and the minutes of Keyshawn Murphy, because he had been limited after that knee injury in the Oklahoma State exhibition. He didn't play that much, although I thought was a factor for Auburn against Memphis last week. I thought he was a big factor. I thought Auburn was a different team defensively with Keyshawn Murphy in the game last night. Now, down the stretch, Auburn went to that smaller lineup and came up with some big defensive stops. And, Bill, you're right. I mean, Auburn's going to face some big, big teams. And we'll face one real quick in Houston in about a week and a half in Birmingham. And the same thing when they face Purdue and when they face North Carolina State, and obviously when they get the Southeastern Conference play, and Arizona, oh, by the way, on the road, and the teams that Auburn faces in Vegas. So there is a lot of work to be done, but Auburn found a way to win a ball game last night. And now you're 1-0, and now you get ready for Merrimack on Thursday. Merrimack lost. Merrimack played in that same event that Auburn played at a couple years ago out in South Dakota. and lost to South Dakota State in its opener last night.
Well, I agree with everything you're saying there, Andy. I mean, you saw a lot of things to be excited about, and it's a situation where you'd much rather, learn from a tight win when you're a 20-something point favorite. You're going to learn a lot, when you play a team that gives you that kind of scare. But back to Keyshawn, I was really impressed with
which
his
one? Which
Keyshawn
one?
Murphy.
Yep, yep.
Back to Andy was just talking about it.
I know, but we got to be
yeah,
clear.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. But his offensive presence last night, his moves, the touch that he showed around the basket last night was better than I recall seeing from him at Mississippi State. He was quite the factor on both ends of the court last night.
The two Keyshawns last night, Keyshawn Hall scored 28, and it did a lot of his damage at the free throw line, going 16 of 18.
Right.
And Keyshawn Murphy in, 19 minutes of play, was 8 of 9 from the field, 1 of 1 from the free throw line, and scored 17 points with 8 rebounds.
And had a huge block, late, yeah. Too. Yeah, in that defensive run.
So I was pleased with obviously both of those. Keyshawn Hall's a scorer.
Yes, indeed.
I mean, he's a scorer, and he has been up big for Auburn in big situations already. In both of the overtime games, I mean, he was the driving force. He gave Auburn a chance against Oklahoma State, and last night helped Auburn win that game and did it primarily at the free throw line when he went 16 of 18 from the line. It was good to see Auburn turn that around because Auburn was, 6 of 9 from the free throw line at one point in the first half and finished 7 of 16 from the line in the first half, and then really turned things around from the charity stripe from halftime on.
Andy, there were a lot of quotes from players and from Stephen Pearl in postgame about the need to clean up sort of the details defensively, finishing possessions and doing maybe even things that, reverting to the fundamentals when it comes to the defensive effort. Do you get the sense, talking to Coach, that he's confident this group has the ability to improve defensively?
Absolutely. And I think this team's going to improve not just at the defensive end of the floor. That may be the most immediate improvement needed. But I think this is an Auburn team that's going to continue. I hope it's an Auburn team that continues to improve as this season goes along, just by the fact that it will have played together for a little bit more. I mean, this team has been together since June. Other than Tahad Pettifer and Blake Mashalik, and Mashalik did not play last night for Auburn. So really, other than Tahad Pettifer, this group has been together since the start of summer. And I know that there's a lot of teams out there that are in the same boat as Auburn. And I think this Auburn team will improve as this season goes on. And it's going to need to, considering the incredible schedule that Auburn has, even before it gets to the Southeastern Conference at this point. So, yeah, was it scary last night? You bet it was. Absolutely it was. And I'll be honest, I kept thinking, all right, when is Auburn going to finally put this team away? I think I said that on the air at one point. You just wait for that to finally click and you pull away and you win the game comfortably. Well, that wasn't in the cards for Auburn last night, but Auburn found a way to win it and learn from it. Now get ready for the second game of the season on Thursday night against Merrimack before you close out this homestand against Wofford next week.
A couple of really big players who made their debut last night and came up in big moments. I think Kevin Overton comes to mind, right, with those two. I mean, when Auburn's got to have some stops, when Auburn would love to see something good happen defensively, it's Kevin Overton who has the block and then the steal to disrupt Bethune's momentum.
He had four steals last night, and they came at big, big times in the game. And I like Kevin Overton. He's got a little bit of edge to him, the way he plays, especially at the defensive end. Auburn needs that, I believe. I was pleased with the way he played. Just to keep with your theme, Sebastian Williams-Adams, I thought, was really good. 15 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists in 29 minutes in his college debut. It just didn't look too big for him.
Nah, including a three. He looked like somebody who's been playing college basketball for a while, Andy.
And by the way, both he and Keyshawn Murphy really good on our post game. last night. It was the first time to get to talk to those. I know they spoke with the rest of the media as well, but I was delighted to get those guys on the post game last night. Both did a really good job with their post game, and now you move forward and you work on things and you work on defense, I think, first. But Auburn against Oklahoma State was not a good defensive team. Was, I thought, very good as a defensive team against Memphis, and last night, not so much. And that's something I know that, and Stephen talked about it in his post game with us. I know he talked about it with the mass media as well. That is something that they will be working on, not only for Merrimack on Thursday, but moving forward for the Tigers. I think, is the key for Auburn defensively right now.
What can you say about the way Sebastian Williams-Adams has impressed his coaches to the point where, I think a couple of weeks ago, we wouldn't have imagined a scenario where, even with Murph battling health problems, the thought that there's going to be 90 seconds to go in the opener, and it's a one-possession game, and one of the five guys out there is the true freshman. Well, it's Sway out there, and Auburn's giving him the ball and letting him make plays. What can you say about, just how he's how he's opened some eyes since arriving on campus?
Well, I mean, take a look at him. He doesn't look like a freshman. He doesn't have a freshman's body. I mean, physically, he's put together. That you can tell that there's an athlete there. And, you know, last night he came up big for Auburn. He wanted to be better at the free throw line. He was better at the line in the second half than in the first. But a year ago, and I'm not going to try and compare him to Tahad. I thought Tahad a year ago, he didn't play like a freshman. I mean, his best games for Auburn came on the road in big, big games. That was what impressed me the most about an impressive freshman for Auburn a year ago and the way Tahad played for Auburn last year in those big games, playing against Houston, down in Houston, the way he played at Georgia. The way he played against Creighton in the NCAA tournament, the way he played against Michigan State in the NCAA tournament, that's just to name a few. And I know last night was Bethune-Cookman and it was a home game, but that's a heck of a debut for Sebastian Williams-Adams, Sway, as they call him, as you mentioned there. And, Dan, I was impressed with the way he played. I thought the team showed some composure last night in having to hold it together, especially the way that game went into overtime, and then I thought Auburn took over overtime. And Britt Bowen sent me a text after our game last night, and he's like, "When's the last time that the Auburn men and women both played overtime games and both won on the same day?" And then add to that that both of the head coaches are coaching in their first games for Auburn.
That's probably is a first.
I don't know when that's ever happened before.
I doubt that it ever happened where both coaches are in their first game and that happens.
Surely not. But a good win as well
for
Larry Vickers and the women. They jumped out, it seemed like, in every quarter, and Charlotte made a run until overtime.
Yeah, then Auburn,
and Auburn just
put
just
them
dominated
away.
Yeah. Overtime last night. Absolutely did, yes.
So a good start there. Merrimack coming up Thursday night, and look, Andy, you can if you've got some info, you can give us that. But look, this is about Auburn, and as you were saying, I mean, getting better. I would think, primarily defensively, and still these guys are learning each other. So I mean, that's what's important here in these next couple of ball games before the Houston matchup in Birmingham.
Well, this is the one thing if I've started to do my prep on Merrimack College, the Warriors. If you're not ready to play against the zone defense, you're in some trouble, because that is the mark of Merrimack and their coaching staff. And they may play zone all night long. I mean, it may be like playing Syracuse back in the Jim Boeheim days. Auburn will see. If Auburn's zone offense isn't dialed in, it could be a long night for Auburn on Thursday. I believe Auburn's a much better basketball team, but you better be ready to play against the zone. You better shoot it well from the outside or find those spots in the zone to be able to get to the basket on Thursday night. Auburn will be tested just because this Merrimack team plays almost exclusively a zone defense that Auburn will see on Thursday night.
Well, I had not heard their mascot or their nickname. I was hoping they were the Monitors. just for the there are a lot of people that have no idea what I'm talking about, but I mean, you know. Yeah. Andy Burcham, voice of the Tigers, with us here on the Tuesday Drive. We need to get to break. Andy, can you stick with us? We'll talk a little football when we come back.
You betcha. All right.
Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
River City Door Company understands your time is valuable.
Talked a little bit about last night's season opener for both the men and women getting overtime wins. Football-wise, it's a new beginning for Auburn, Andy, as DJ Durkin now at the helm of the Tigers as they get ready to head to Nashville.
DJ Durkin, Auburn's interim head coach, formerly coached at Maryland and brought to Auburn by Hugh Freeze. He was quick to note last night on Tiger Talk today, or last night at Tiger Talk and on his press conference, his thanks to Hugh Freeze for bringing DJ and his family to Auburn to coach this ball club. I don't think there's any question that DJ is now a candidate for the head coaching spot at Auburn. And with that in mind, don't you know that there's a bit of urgency for DJ now and for this team now, as it has three games remaining in this regular season, still a great deal to play for on this Auburn team, but a tumultuous week. Tumultuous weekend for sure for Auburn football after the offense just fell completely flat last Saturday against Kentucky, scoring just 3 points and having trouble moving the ball all game long. And then the word that wasn't terribly surprising on Sunday that Hugh Freeze had been relieved of his duties with Auburn. It wasn't a surprise as well that DJ Durkin has been named as the interim head coach. And now Auburn moves forward and getting ready for Saturday. Interesting to note, although again not a surprise, that Derek Nix is the offensive coordinator. He will call plays, and DJ Durkin will continue to call the defensive plays for Auburn. Saturday afternoon at Vanderbilt at 3, our coverage begins at noon from the brand new Vanderbilt football stadium. Looking forward to getting there. The last time we were there, they were working on the north end zone, the south end zone. They literally hung the scoreboard from cranes.
Yeah,
and
now
that was a game. That's one of the more remarkable visiting games I've ever called, because at least 60 to 65% of that stand was orange and blue in Nashville that day. It was remarkable. I don't think that will be the case when Auburn goes there Saturday afternoon.
No, times have changed a little bit. I mean, you know, it wasn't that uncommon for quite a few teams to have the advantage as far as the crowd in Nashville over the years, but this Vanderbilt team deservedly is nationally ranked. Man, what an effort they put on last week, down 34-10 in Austin, and came back and had the opportunity. Were on top of an onside kick that looked like if they'd recovered it, I mean, they had an excellent shot of at least tying that ball game. So this Vandy team comes in very confident, Andy, and to the situation with Auburn. DJ Durkin's defense has been just outstanding, and that's really understating it. Three teams nationally have not allowed more than 24 points in a game. Auburn, and then the numbers 1 and 2 teams in the nation, in Ohio State and Indiana.
You take away game one against Baylor, and Sawyer Robertson just threw the ball all over the ballpark that night. Take away that ball game, and this Auburn defense has been as good as anybody in the country, period. Mm-hmm. And especially against the run this season. And it occurred again last Saturday night against Kentucky. And, you know, look at what Xavier Atkins has done for Auburn. Look at what Bobby Jamison Travis up front. Keyron Crawford. I thought Keldrick Falk, from a stat standpoint, had his best game of the season.
Thought so.
For Auburn against Kentucky. Auburn may be a little bit banged up. I don't know the status right now of Elijah Melendez. I guess we'll get the first availability report.
He was walking around pretty – it looked like he was walking around easily today at practice, but he was just in sweats.
Correct. So, you know, what does that mean moving forward for a spot for Auburn that I think has been very good, but I think it's a little bit thin at the linebacking spot? I mean, I love what Robert Woodyard and Xavier Atkins have done, but you need depth at that spot. And, you know, depending on Elijah Melendez and his availability, add DeMarcus Riddick into that as well, that could be a thin spot for Auburn. And that is not what you want going into a Vanderbilt team that can run it and throw it, and you've got the most unique quarterback in the Southeastern Conference right now in Diego Pavia, who everywhere he has gone or every opportunity he's had, he has earned it. In spite of the fact that he was not recruited at all out of high school, played junior college ball, and then New Mexico State, and now at Vanderbilt, and has that team ranked number 15 in the country, 16 in the coaches' poll. And there's a sense of urgency with his Vanderbilt ball club. With that loss to Texas last week, their playoff hopes took a major blow. Mm-hmm. They've got to get back on the winning track this week against Auburn, I think, to have a shot at the playoffs right now.
And, I mean, it just feels remarkable that we're unironically talking about, you know, it's November and we're talking about a Vanderbilt team having a chance to make the college football playoff, but that's the kind of impact that Diego Pavia has had over the last 2 years, and the rest of the roster has come around. And I mean, obviously Clark Lee and his defense has improved considerably during his tenure as well. And that's, you know, something I asked DJ Durkin about yesterday, Andy, is just the thought that amid this difficult season for Auburn, and a season where, especially if you listen to John Cohen, it's clear the offense shoulders a lot of the responsibility for Auburn's win-loss record being where it is, that you've had, and not to say that effort's been a problem on offense, because it hasn't, but the fact that you've had defensive players continue to show up and deliver and put up these kind of results, I thought it was amazing against Arkansas. You know, when you think about how Arkansas's played, the job they did, especially in the second half, to turn the tide of that game, and then even though Auburn didn't beat Kentucky, I mean that Auburn defense,
you hold them to 10 points and 240 yards. I mean, you can't ask, you can't, you know, expect any more against an SEC team.
And there are remarkable players. I mean, DJ Durkin didn't want to single out too many of them, but he mentioned Falk and Anthony as the most vocal leaders.
Tough to see the champ Anthony maybe out for the rest of the season.
And that's you know, kind of a star-crossed 2 years for champ Anthony injury wise.
Staying healthy,
but you've had impact players all over that side of the ball, Andy.
No question. I mean, take a look at, and obviously Atkins and Woodyard have garnered a great deal of the attention. Look what Kieron Crawford has done, leads Auburn with sacks with 5. Keldrick Falk is as important as a player on the field, and that's considerable. He is also one of the unquestioned leaders on this defense. Watch him work before a ball game. Watch him work when that team is on the sideline. He has taken, I think, the mantle of a leader to heart on this team. I love Auburn at the corners. I love Kian Lee and Jay Crawford. Rayon Strader and Rayshon Pleasant give Auburn some quality depth at the cornerback spot. Now, what does Auburn do if it doesn't have Champ Anthony? Then Jacquez Robinson's got to step up at the safety spot. New boy Fagans, oh my gosh, I mean, he comes up with an enormous interception, and just through sheer effort, trying to get a few more yards across midfield, and the offensive player for Kentucky comes up and not only strips the ball but makes the fumble recovery. And Auburn would have had the ball down 7 inside midfield at that point, and a lot more time to work with. What Bobby Jamison Travis is starting to give Auburn up front, 25 tackles for Auburn at the nose tackle spot. I also like what both Malik's have done in Autry and Blockton for the Tigers. Listen, Amaris Williams as well. I like this defense. It's kind of it's not a no-name defense, but it's not, you know, other than Falk coming into the season, no one else was talking about this defense from an individual standpoint. Now, Xavier Atkins and Robert Woodyard and Kieron Crawford, those are names that you're talking about almost every week. From this defense. And now their guy, their coordinator, is now the head coach of this team, at least for the next 3 ball games. And I think this defense will respond to that even more, the fact that it's DJ Durkin leading this Auburn ball club right now.
And I would imagine, Andy, and you don't want to, it's tough to get into, you know, too deep into the future with the situation the program's in right now, but I would imagine for potential candidates to be Auburn's next head coach, the thought that you have this many exciting defensive players, many of whom have at least 1 year of college eligibility left, and that you could at least make the case that they should continue their careers at Auburn, I think that would be one of several things that could make this a very attractive job to coaches out there.
Well, I don't think there's any question. And whomever is the next head coach for Auburn, whether it's DJ Durkin or someone else outside the program right now, and you've all heard the names, I will say this, John Cohen is keeping that close to the vest.
Yes, indeed.
At this point, and will continue to do so. I think one of the big initial jobs of whomever is named Auburn's next head coach is retaining a lot of these players, because there are going to be opportunities for guys to jump ship. And you know that. We all know that. That's the reality of it right now. But whomever Auburn brings in, whether it's DJ or someone else, retaining the talent he has and continuing to put together this recruiting class for Auburn, it will be a challenge for whomever is the next head football coach at Auburn. And it's not just the defensive side of the ball, it's that offensive side of the ball as well.
No question. I mean, the timing is going to be critical, and that's one of the things that John Cohen was saying yesterday, that he'd like to get it done as soon as possible after the Iron Bowl, before that signing period begins December 3rd. So it'll be really interesting to watch. Andy, I'm excited to see how the offense looks this week. I mean, one of the things DJ Durkin talked about yesterday is playing with an edge, playing, you know, full speed. I would expect that's going to be the case this Saturday up in Nashville.
What do you have to lose
right
now from an offensive standpoint? I mean, what have you done throughout this season, with the exception of a couple games, just hasn't worked. What do you have to lose but to go out and play with your hair on fire from an offensive standpoint? And I think that starts with Derek Nix, who's Auburn's offensive coordinator, and now he is the guy offensively for Auburn. So I don't think that it will be a dramatic shift in style from Auburn offensively, but I will be interested to see how Auburn performs moving forward with Derek Nix calling the plays, solely calling the plays for this offense for the last three ball games of the season.
Andy, as you mentioned, 3 o'clock kick, noon airtime. I'll let everybody know what there's a lot going on across the Auburn Sports Network.
Right now on the Talking Tigers podcast, we're talking NIL, events specifically with Scott Duvall, who has worked with Auburn in baseball and track and field, and Bianca Webb, who has worked with both men's, women's basketball, and football. They're now a part of Auburn's NIL events team in athletics. Next Monday, Mike Burgemaster, Auburn's offensive coordinator for basketball. Burgo, as he's called, who hails from just north of Boston, went to Miami and worked for Jim Larrañaga as an equipment manager, started at the very bottom, and then moved to Auburn to get an opportunity as a graduate assistant, and now is one of Auburn's top assistant basketball coaches. And fascinating to get to know Burgo a little bit more. Just recorded today, and this will be going out a week from Monday. Sat down for about 40 minutes with Alex McPherson, and he tells his story of the last couple years of the ulcerative colitis that, it had him from 167 pounds when he was at his strength down to 110 before his colon was removed. That's right, Auburn's place kicker does not have his colon. And at 21 years of age, and he talks about the week shift from the Missouri game to the win at Arkansas, where he misses three field goals. Remember, this is a guy that had not missed three field goals in his Auburn career, but he misses three field goals in that overtime loss to Missouri, and then comes back the week later, ties an Auburn and SEC record going 6-6. So it's a fascinating story, and he really doesn't hold back. I talked to him about it before. I said, listen, we'll go as far as you want to go with this. He says, I've got nothing to hide here. So it is it's a fascinating nearly 40 minutes that we'll spend with the Auburn place kicker coming up in a couple of weeks. We're working on our lineup for Saturday as Auburn plays at Vanderbilt. I will tell you the one that we have confirmed right now at 12:30 is one of those two place kickers that join Alex McPherson, who have 6 field goals in the game, and that's Al Del Greco.
That's
part
good.
Of that 83 national championship team for Auburn. Kicked the field goal that we all thought was going to win Auburn a national championship against Michigan. Went on to a great NFL career. Now works or has worked in the past at Samford as a golf coach. A wonderful golfer. And Al will join us. Speaking of Nashville, of course, for a lot of his NFL career lasted with the Titans. So we are working on the lineup, but he is the first one that that is going to be part of that lineup on Saturday. And of course, then we've got basketball Thursday night, Auburn and Merrimack at Neville Arena. Our coverage starts at 6:30, courtside at Neville. The Tigers and the Warriors on Thursday night, 7:00 is tip off, and it's a busy time, isn't it? Huh?
No question, no question about it. And you're out. I'm really looking forward to the interview with Alex McPherson. I was thinking, Andy, some of us could lose 57 pounds, but none of us are going to be starting at 167. No. 167, no. I'm thinking maybe ninth grade was probably the last time.
Nope.
167,
nope.
My goodness, man.
I don't even want to think about that, but, so I'm just going to let that one go. And certainly the way it occurred.
Oh, no kidding.
And what he has
unbelievable.
Done, he's married.
Yes.
Married to a gal that he's known since high school.
That's great.
And it's a fascinating story. I'll just leave it at that. That comes up a week from Monday on the Talking Tigers.
Looking forward to it. Andy, it's always great when we get an opportunity to spend a little bit of time with you. Really appreciate it and look forward to everything that's coming up.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great day. War Eagle!
Voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us as he does on Tuesdays. We need to get to break. We'll open up the phone lines. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
On The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Our thanks to Andy Burcham for joining us here. And Dan, yesterday, as you mentioned, down in Troy, as the Troy women get off to a successful start as well. But, there we go. I think it was anxious for the next one. But we haven't had a chance to really talk or let you on the air, talk about the change that was made. Hugh Freeze out Sunday, DJ Durkin in. It has been just a miserable offensive year for Auburn, Dan. I mean, just miserable.
Yeah, and I don't hold ill will towards Hugh Freeze. I don't even think.
No, nor do I.
I don't even think it was that bad of an idea. Although I do think that some of the folks who were vocally saying this is why it's a bad idea probably feel pretty emboldened, you know, that some of what they predicted turned out to be accurate. Just for all the things Hugh Freeze did right, and he did do quite a few things right. Yeah, I think he did do some things right. The fact is that he was an offensive, a supposed offensive mastermind. I think that was one of the things he was brought in to be, on top of an outstanding recruiter, was an outstanding offensive mind and an outstanding evaluator of quarterbacks, right? Like, that was the belief that's what you were getting. And even a guy who didn't necessarily need to shop at the top of the quarterback market, a guy who could identify the diamond in the rough, the quarterback that was overlooked, that could fit his system and come in and execute.
Right.
And what happened instead was, in year three, and this isn't the case for the entire Hugh Freeze era, because last year it felt like there were times when Auburn's offense got in its own way and you had the ability to attack and you schemed yourself out of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Auburn made some plays last year. This year, I mean,
no.
This is the least explosive team. I mean, it's been a dud.
This year, Hugh Freeze has seemingly gone into a must-win season with a player at QB1 and a player at QB2 who simply don't look like they're SEC players. Like that's where it is now. Jackson Arnold was the worst quarterback in the SEC last year in yards per attempt. He finished last at Oklahoma. He got benched during Oklahoma's first conference game for playing like this last season. He didn't get to go back in until the other guy got hurt. Hawkins got hurt, and they had to go back to Jackson Arnold. Hugh Freeze insisted that was a guy he could fix, and that was a guy he could lean on to be his quarterback in a must win, a critically important season. And then of course, when you make this change to Ashton Daniels, I mean, you saw it Saturday night.
Well, as a couple of callers had pointed out, I mean, Ashton Daniels was brought in to be an experienced backup.
I have no ill will towards the guys actually playing either, but it was just like 2008 with Tommy Tuberville, and just like Gene Chizik in 2012, and just like Brian Harsin in 2022, if you don't have an answer at the quarterback position, and this isn't year one, you're probably going to finish close to last place, and you're probably going to get fired.
You're going to finish closer to last place now than you did even back in 2008. I mean, even though they finished there. But, I mean, if you have exceptional players at other positions, you could get by better 10, 15 years ago. Not anymore.
No, but I would even argue that the 2008 team had exceptional players.
They did not I don't know that they had the skill players that Auburn has. Though
probably not. Ben Tate was pretty good.
He was.
I mean, Ben Tate was an NFL running back. I mean, there are some pretty good players on the 2008 Auburn Tigers. A lot of those players start on the 2010 Auburn Tigers 2 years later. The 2012 team.
What's crazy is there were a couple of guys who you never saw on that team that a couple of years later were pretty good.
There were guys you saw in
Zachary, remember, was like, you know.
There were guys you Garvin. Saw. But again, how are you going to see receivers?
That's true. Got to get them the ball. Somebody's got to be able to get them the ball.
A lot of players on the 2012 team.
Yeah. People are wondering about that this year. This receiver core of Auburn, they don't have anywhere near the numbers you would expect, but you got to have the opportunity.
And that's not a way to shift blame from Hugh Freeze to the quarterbacks either, because it's on Hugh Freeze.
Those are his guys.
It's on Hugh Freeze to identify the answer at that position and go get him. And if he can't do that, here's the thing. When you say he's an outstanding recruiter, that comes with an asterisk, because an enormous amount of recruiting these days is the quarterback position. If you can't recruit the quarterback position, then your ability to recruit is questionable. And the fact is, Hugh Freeze, how many of the...
I still think he's one of the best closers you're going to find.
Oh, he recruited some excellent players. Yep. But if you're going to talk about him as an excellent recruiter, you have to include with the parenthetical, except quarterback. And it's like, well, how excellent of a recruiter are you if it's excellent everywhere but quarterback? Mm-hmm.
When that's supposed to be your forte.
Yeah. And now you're hearing stories about... I mean, what the John Talty on CBS had the story that Tommy Tuberville personally recommended that Freeze move on from Thorne after 2023, and Freeze decided to double down and bring Thorne back in 2024, and then evaluating quarterbacks this year. I mean, he makes a big bet on Jackson Arnold, but like we said, there were warning signs there with Jackson Arnold, and when Hugh Freeze insisted he was close, like. Yes, the games were close. The fourth quarters were close. But when your production on offense, and especially as a passing offense, looks like this, I don't...
It's hard to even call it production, Dan. I mean, it really is. I mean, Auburn is so far behind the next to the worst offensive team in this league. It's embarrassing.
If you're a quarterback away, you're not close. You're bad. That's what you call a team that's a quarterback away. Drew,
well, that's
you
what watch the offense is. It's really hard for me to call the team bad.
Okay.
The offense is bad.
Okay, well, but Hugh Freeze insisted the offense was close.
Yeah.
He insisted the offense was close week after week after week with the worst quarterback play in the conference. And no, that was delusion. That was to suggest the offense was close with these guys at quarterback. I mean, maybe they were close in that they were a quarterback away. I'll say it again. If you're a quarterback away, you're not close. You're bad.
Especially running whatever the offense that Hugh Freeze was trying to run.
And I
don't know if they'd have been better served doing something else. You feel like perhaps they would have been.
I have my doubts. I have my doubts.
I think we're going to get an opportunity to see if they look a little better doing something a little different starting this week.
What you are as an offense, now more than ever, what you are as an offense is based around what your quarterback is good at. And if that list is small, your identity as an offense is...
Well, if your quarterbacks are not bad at running, you ought to run the ball more.
But that's a tough thing to base an offense around. Yeah, I mean, we've seen like your...
Well, can you do much worse?
You probably can't. Well, that was the bounce back from... I mean, you saw the offense from Brian Harsin to Cadillac suddenly went to a much more run heavy. Now, was the Cadillac offense an offense that was going to win you a lot
was
of big
games?
Was it
a juggernaut or anything? No. No, but it could actually... You'd have a better chance than you did with the prior offense. Maybe that's what we'll see.
I want to talk about candidates too. I know we got to get to break, because I've got some thoughts on the hot board.
Fortunately, I mean, we've still got plenty of time. Jake Crane will join us at the bottom of hour number two. We'll continue with this, wrap things up for hour number one and more here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill.
And our thanks to Andy Burcham, voice of the Tigers, for joining us. Hope you had a chance to hear that. If you missed any of it, check out the podcast.
Podcast of The Drive, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts, ESPNAU.com, Podcast Center, or just your favorite podcasting platforms. Search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Big shout out to Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Hour number two of The Drive coming up following our top of the hour break. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
From Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in, give us your thoughts on the state of Auburn athletics. Now, it was interesting. Yesterday, you have the debuts of new men's and women's mm-hmm. basketball coaches, and we also had a press conference where we met the interim football coach. I mean, how about that I can't recall that happening. Yeah. Where you had three new coaches basically they're on display in one day.
I mean, you had some turbulent seasons, right? I think you've had a year. I want to say there's been a year this century where Auburn had a new football, like where you had basketball, football, and baseball changeover in the same year. Like you go a calendar year with a new men's basketball coach, a new football coach, and a baseball coach.
Go back and look.
But the thought of in a week.
Right.
You're going to have – now, it would feel more like the dawning of a new era if DJ Durkin were the permanent head coach and not the interim head coach, and we'll see what happens over these next couple of weeks.
I think the opportunity is there.
Yeah. I still wonder, though, when I was talking in the previous segment, Bill, or in the previous hour, like if a lot of the problems this year seem to be based around decisions that were already made about who to go with at quarterback, who to build the quarterback room around. That's going to be something tough for DJ Durkin to overcome the next three games or so. If he shows he can do it, if he finds a way to unlock Auburn's passing offense over the next couple of weeks,
or some kind of offense. I mean, something, because look, it is obvious if you could squeeze 24 points out of this team, you've got a chance to win every game.
It feels tough to even with some quality players in the run game, it feels tough to be one dimensional, and it feels tough to be. I mean, I think Auburn's tried to scale it back.
I agree. I mean, you're going to have to throw it, but I think it just feels like there have been some things Auburn hasn't really done. They haven't used the running backs nearly like we thought they would. I know that's because they're max protection, but you got to have your maybe you've got to have your quarterback moving. You're athletic enough at quarterback to have your quarterback moving, be able to dump the ball to a running back, or take some more shots downfield with a quarterback moving. Don't just drop them back 7 yards.
Yeah, I mean, I think they can try these things. I just wonder, certainly with two quarterbacks who have decent sized resumes as college football players now, like how effective
right.
this can truly be. And like you said, I mean, you were curious to see. I think with the Kentucky game, I was curious to see how Ashton did, and I wanted to keep the door open that if Hugh Freeze presented the idea that next year's quarterback was on the team right now and ready to help you win games, it would be tougher to make a change. I just listed those coaches.
Agree.
I mean, part of the reason that the Tuberville era had to end in 08 wasn't just the on-field results. It was the idea that you had no idea where you were going at quarterback. You were directionless after that season, and it felt like nobody in the room was an option. In 2012, not only did you have those on-field results, it didn't feel like anyone in the room was a realistic option to be the quarterback leading you out of that. And with Brian Harsin in 22, you didn't feel like you had the future at quarterback. And I was willing to see. Let's see if, you know, what Ashton maybe represented. They don't seem to have any faith that Deuce is that guy right now, and Jackson played his way out of the role. I wanted to see what it looked like. Two drives in. Three drives in, maybe. It's like, oh, okay. It's this is not the answer short term.
No, my goodness. It was a punt fest.
This is not the answer long term, and Hugh Freeze doesn't have any more answers, and it became as urgent. I thought firing him after Missouri would have been...
I thought that was premature. I think John Cohen said it yesterday, and it's exactly what we said last week. You needed absolute proof, and I think Saturday was that final proof.
Yeah, if you wanted to fire him after Missouri, I thought it was a bit of a rush to judgment. I mean, you're not... Most of these coaches, when you look at who's gotten fired this year... Nobody's.
Oh, there's been something bad. There's been something embarrassing.
Yeah, nobody this season, if you look at the in-season terminations anywhere, nobody's getting fired for losing close games to playoff teams.
No,
not what gets you fired. You get fired when you start losing close games to bad teams, or you start getting your doors blown off.
Exactly.
Or some combination of the two. And that's where the loss against Kentucky made it to where it's just it was clear that you had to push the button.
Oh, it had to be done. It had to be done.
I like DJ Durkin as a coach. To be honest, I'm a little, especially, and I know the defense has been very good. I'm sort of eager for the book to close, for the page to turn, and retaining, you know, certainly promoting a defensive coach to head coach feels like you're not necessarily turning the page from last season to this season by promoting the new head coach from within. And I wonder how much retention we'll have at all. You know, if there's a new head coach, I wonder how much retention.
If there's a new head coach, there will be a tremendous turnover.
Yeah, I wonder what kind of staff retention we'll have at all. And I wonder how bad of a thing that is necessarily when you've had these kind of on-field results and maybe it's time for a new era. I swear we're not kidding, Bill. We went into the Wings 94.3 studio on Sunday to record the Observer podcast, and the moment we hit microphone on, the song that was playing on Wings was Bob Seger's "Turn the Page," and that's exactly what I think needs to happen for Auburn football.
All right, I like
DJ Durkin.
Oh, I do too. Like I said, I'm sort of going to be. I'm very interested to just see what things look like. I understand there's only so much that he can do, that they can do, but I think it'll be really interesting. I think Auburn is in a better position than a lot of people give him credit for as far as being able to get the next coach. I think there are a lot of people that seem to feel like, well, Auburn's going to be standing at the back of the line waiting for the leftovers after LSU and Penn State and Florida. And, you know, and maybe somebody else. I don't know that that is going to be the case.
I mean, I think if you're in a head-to-head competition with one of those three programs specifically, it could be difficult because those are three of the top 15, 20 programs in college football, just like you are. I don't think it's a reason. I don't think you should turn away from a candidate just because you think one of those three schools also want
him. I think Peter Burns just said, I think Peter Burns was on ESPN a little earlier, and he said he surprised the interviewer when he said he'd put Auburn at the top of the SEC schools that have openings right now.
Oh, and I think the roster you're stepping into, if you get here early enough and you get to work on retention, and I think that's why John Cohen said getting a coach as early as...
As soon as he can after the Iron Bowl.
Yeah, the thought that he's wants to get a coach as soon as he can after that, you know, to beat the portal window
yes.
opening is, I mean, that's a really
portal window and hopefully be able to sign somebody there in the signing period. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline. We'd love your thoughts. Who's on your list? All right, we're giving everybody the opportunity. Let's hear your top couple of candidates. 334-321-1390. And
you did that on purpose. Let's get to Pat. What's up, buddy?
Yeah.
Who's on your list, Pat?
Okay, hold on. We're not going there. Okay, I'm going to tell you what. Y'all made a couple of good points, and I want to agree. Okay, so you had to be absolutely sure before we fire the coach, okay, but that we hired because he beat Alabama twice. It was his only real resume. He beat Alabama twice. Okay, and then we go, and you go, okay. But when we hire a coach, well, we don't have to be absolutely necessary. We just gotta find a guy that could do it. You know, good fit, and that kind of stuff. Those are the kind of comments that make me mad. Now, I do agree.
Did I say that?
You're right, Bill. No, I said people say that.
Okay.
And so I'm not saying
I want to be as sure as possible. The problem is you can never be as sure when you're hiring as you are when you're firing. Right.
I don't want to do revisionist history here, Pat, and I will let you talk. I promise. I want to say with Freeze, I was interested to see if the argument about him being such a recruiting whiz, because Auburn's roster was in trouble.
You were more concerned about the recruiting, I think, than you were about the offense.
I was concerned about whether or not he still had that touch as a recruiter and as an offensive coach. You know, I think there was that concern, and it didn't so much have to do with Ole Miss. It had to do with, because it's not so much about what they've done in the past. It's about what you're getting right now. But I see what you're saying.
We get to freeze. Look, you're right. He was a great recruiter, and you know what? He did us a favor. He stocked our cupboards, and so now we are one of the best position in the SEC. Nobody wants to go to LSU. LSU's town sucks. Florida's town is not a great town. Auburn is a place where I was talking to a defensive coach under Durkin the other night, and he said Auburn, the coaches love Auburn. They want to live there forever. It's the best place to coach. It's got the best community, the best fans. It's the premium place if you're a coach, if you want to enjoy life. And I thought that was really impressive. And so now we have a stock cupboard. And so now the question is, I disagree with Cohen. And I feel like Cohen, he should take this hire as however long this next coach is here is how long you're here. Because if this guy lasts
I got you.
Okay, so here's my question.
You gotta look
a little deeper, okay? I'm looking at next year. If you hire a guy like Summerall, who quite honestly hasn't done anything, he had 2 years, here we go, 2 years at Troy, okay, I'll give you that, whatever. But now he left a program, he's at a program now that was 11-3, 10-2, and then now they're 9-5. Okay, I'm not going to hold that against them. Now they've got two losses. Both their losses are blowouts by 20 or more, and now they're going to play Memphis, probably lose again. Okay, so now you get Summerall. We race the clock to get to this portal, which if you hire Summerall, everyone's going to leave in the portal. So I don't understand the point for that. That's totally stupid to me. You're racing the portal. Everyone in our team can leave once we hire the coach in January. So they can all leave whenever they want. So if I'm a coach, if I'm a player, I'm not racing to get in the portal. Why would I do that? If we were going to hire somebody like Lane Kiffin, I would wait around and see if we got him. And if we didn't, when the portal opened, I can then go. And I'm the cream of the crop.
Well, you're going to have till January 16th. I mean, basically, you got January 1st to the 16th is the portal, and the plan, the expectation is you're going to have a head coach before the portal closes, preferably early.
My only thing. Yeah, the only thing I want to say in this one today is I want to say, look, if you're not going to get Lane Kiffin, okay, I think he walks in. I think we're top 10 preseason next year. I think nobody leaves. I think it's a done deal that no one will leave. I think he.
Why would you think defensive players wouldn't leave?
Because I think he would keep DJ Durkin.
If DJ Durkin wanted to stay on under Lane,
why would DJ Durkin not want to stay on and win a national championship? You'd be a contender right off the bat. But let's say we don't get Lane Kiffin. I'm saying hiring somebody like John Summerall. You know, and I know Jay Boyce bumped talking about it, good about him or whatever. I'm saying John Summerall might be a great coach one day, but he's walking into a death trap because if we don't hire Lane Kiffin and he goes to LSU or Florida, okay, but we play those teams here next year. Okay. Plus, we have 6 road games. Okay. So he's going to have a losing season. Portal's going to open. We're going to lose our players.
Okay. Let me jump in, Pat, because I don't disagree too much. I disagree with some of it. If you are right, and Auburn were to hire a coach, and then you saw the roster break apart in the portal, it would be a huge setback for whoever that new coach is. Because then you're right. The schedule's very difficult, and they would have to go through that. You know, I wonder where the expectations would be immediately, and you'd have to maybe try to dig your way out of that hole. I wonder how much that influences.
Whoever the coach is, it's going to be a difficult year next year. You hire Lane. Lane has one career win against a nationally ranked team. One in his career. Right, and you've got to go to Alabama, to Georgia, to Ole Miss, to Tennessee next year. I don't know that that's really enticing to Lane Kiffin to come in and think, well, I may go from a playoff team to losing four games, even if I keep everybody my first year.
Well, look, everybody right now, I say Ole Miss, LSU, and Florida think he's their home run hire. Mm-hmm. Pay him the max contract.
He is the Ole Miss home run hire. No, they got him.
Okay, well, what I'm saying is that's and they want to keep them, so they're going to pay them the max amount theoretically to keep them. So you've got three of the top teams right now that are technically the big dogs we're talking about. They're trying to get a coach, and they all are all agreement that this is the one guy that's the right guy, except for Auburn. But that's fine. But if he's the right guy,
Auburn may not. You know, you don't know that Auburn doesn't. Yeah,
he was John Cohen's number one guy last time. I'm going to disagree with you there, Pat. Lane Kiffin was John Cohen's top target the last time Auburn looked for a coach.
But you know, multiple schools have him as a top guy. Multiple schools aren't going to get him. Only one's going to have him.
Well, what's going to happen if we got him? If we said, "Hey, Auburn says, you know what? We're done. We're not messing around. We don't care. We're going to pay you 13.5, whatever. That's what we're going to do. We're maxing the contract." And he decides he would rather live in Auburn because he just decides he'd rather go to Lake Martin and rather live in Auburn.
When Let's can you get him stuff. Though, Pat?
As long as we keep our
it team, matters keep, because the portal good. Opens. How are you going to keep those kids from getting in the portal if they don't know who their head coach is? Just because they are promised that somebody's going to be their head coach, until he is their head coach, they're going to get in the portal just in case.
Well, they can get in the portal without leaving.
That is
and
true.
If he becomes our true. Coach, then it'll be good. But think about it. If our season started out with Lane Kiffin as head coach, nobody would complain. Most people that don't pick Lane Kiffin right now don't think we can get him. But if we got him, I don't think a single person would complain. Okay, we would. There's no way we wouldn't be a preseason top 10 team just because if we kept Dirk and we kept all our players. How would you not even think that?
Here's the thing, Pat.
Hardest schedule next year. We will be. Remember when
Deion
went to Colorado?
All right, listen up. The one thing, because I think there's genuine agreement about Lane Kiffin's ability to succeed at Auburn. I don't think you have to sell folks on here's how great Auburn would be with Lane Kiffin. I think the selling point you need to be is what does Auburn present him that he doesn't already have at a place where he's developed emotional attachments and he's become incredibly important. I see the parallels between people thinking they can just go and poach Lane Kiffin and all those programs that thought they could go get Bruce Pearl. Oh yeah, I mean, Bruce Pearl's winning at Auburn. Imagine what he'd do at Kentucky. Bruce Pearl's winning at Auburn. Imagine what he'd do at Kansas or UCLA or Texas or places that have been to a lot of Final Fours in the past. But he stayed, and he built a program here. And I don't think you can look at Bruce Pearl and say, well, he needed to stay and build a program at Auburn, but Lane Kiffin needs to get out of Oxford as soon as possible. Maybe Lane Kiffin will. But I do think the absolute right, like, yes, if you think plan A for Auburn is make Lane Kiffin the best offer you possibly can.
Make him say no.
I think that's totally valid. I don't know if it's a guarantee that you're going to get him in that situation. I think you probably need to have some contingency plans, and there probably are some other coaches that could win as well. But I think planning to go get Lane Kiffin is a great idea. But I think you probably need to have some other ideas as well. It's good stuff, though.
Well,
Pat.
I agree. Look, if he says no, then I go with Durkin. Keep our defense and go hire the best offensive coordinator. I'm just saying, don't hire a Summerall. You're going to lose your defense and your offense, and it's a death trap for the guy. He might be a great coach, but he's walking into a hurricane five. I'm just saying, either you go with Lane and hope it works out, and if he says no, so be it. But he said yes to a $7.5 million contract last time, from what I heard, $7.5 million, and Ole Miss offered him $9 million, and he wanted a little bit more, and we said no. So a guy who signed and said yes to a short-term contract last time and now says no, I mean, and then bails out last minute, I would not say that's a guy who was not wanting to go to Auburn.
Okay? At the time, he was. Yep. Hey, we got to run, Pat.
So it's good stuff, right, Pat.
We have plenty of calls. Yeah. Need to get to our first break, and again, Jake Crane joins us at the bottom of the hour. Alan, hang on, you're up. When we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
At Affordable Comfort Cooling Systems and Plumbing, we believe our work is more.
Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive, and let's get right back to The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Alan is up next. Hey, Alan.
Hey, guys. I cannot match Pat's enthusiasm for Lane Kiffin, but
you can.
If they wanted to go after him, fine. You know, I don't think he's coming. But I wouldn't be disappointed, but I just don't think it's going to happen. That said, I would first choice, personally, I'd go after the guy from Georgia Tech, followed by maybe Summerall. Durkin, I think he's at Auburn. He's right where he needs to be as a DC.
He is a great defensive coordinator. There's no question about that.
I mean, for Auburn, I don't think he needs to be the head coach. And that's all I got. Thanks.
All right, appreciate the call, Alan.
What do you make of Brent Key being mentioned as a name in some of these? He's winning at Georgia Tech.
I think Brent Key is doing an excellent job. He's an Alabama native, obviously a Georgia Tech grad. I think he's worth checking into. I really do.
Yeah, I mean he's one of several guys at their alma maters.
He is
that you'd have to try to poach away. People have mentioned Clark Lee as a potential candidate.
I think you'd be able to get him away from Georgia Tech. I just do.
I think that it's probably a better. I mean, look, the SEC and the Big Ten offer what few other. I mean, I'm not saying you can go get any ACC coach or any Big 12 coach. Although I think Auburn could probably get any Big 12 coach. If they decided that was the number one option on the board, I think they could get anyone, including Kenny Dillingham, who is a name that I think a lot of folks have mentioned out there. And Kenny was a well-regarded assistant to Malzahn in 19.
Well, he's still a kid. He's still only 35.
35 years old, but he's 35 with a team that was supposed to finish in last in the Big 12 last year and made the playoff, nearly beat Texas in the playoff last year. Like I think that's a... That's a name you'll hear for some of these jobs,
and
a guy that a lot of folks really liked when he was here in town.
Back to the Drive Hotline, and Dan is next. Hey, Dan.
Hey, bud.
Hey, guys. All right, I'm going to try to back up Pat a little bit on a few things. Okay, you say why would he leave Ole Miss to go to Auburn? Okay, Auburn has everything you could ever want in a school in a town. You have money. You have an incredible town. You have great traditions. You don't lose your coaches to other schools. I mean, if you think of at Ole Miss, he has lost so many coaches. He lost three coaches to us just because they can't afford to keep them. It's hard for him to get a great defensive coordinator. Now, he's got a decent one now, but obviously he's really not that good. Okay? You come to Auburn, and if, like Pat said, if you keep DJ Durkin, you basically have a top 10 offense in the nation every year. With a top 10 defense in the nation right now, if things go this way, I say you keep Durkin and you make him the highest paid defensive coordinator, and he doesn't leave until he finds a head coaching job. If he wants to do it, that is a big time job. Okay, you just lock him down.
I will come. You have two guys.
All
right, I was going to say one thing in sort of response to he can't keep defensive coordinators. One of the reasons is he makes it tough on his defensive coordinators. The offense he runs makes it tough for defenses to play the way that these coordinators want to play. So that's something that you do have to think about. You may have to, you can't expect you're going to have the kind of defense that Auburn has right now when you have an offense that is rapid. It makes it difficult to practice against. It makes it difficult to be able to do some of the things that Auburn's doing. I'm not saying you want to slow down offense or anything like that, but there is some give and take.
So
the more high powered your offense is, defense is probably going to give.
I think the case has been made. Why it should Dan? I think the case has been made as to why it should be. You know, Kiffin is a logical first choice. Maybe with Durkin. Do you have anyone else?
I'm not going to argue with that.
Do you have anyone else as a choice other than Kiffin?
I just have to refute Bill for 1 second. You're right. If an offense goes fast and they're not any good and they go three and out, then yes, it puts pressure on the defense. Mm-hmm. But if the offense goes fast and goes all the way down the whole field and scores a touchdown, the defense has plenty of time to rest.
It does. It just gives the other teams. I mean, when you're going fast, even when you're going fast in scoring, and Lane's offenses are ridiculous. I mean, they score sometimes, you know, it doesn't take them more than 3 minutes in an entire game, and they'll score five or six touchdowns. But it just creates more opportunities for the other offenses to have the ball. So you're not going to be holding them to 20 points or less all the time, but you're expecting you're going to be scoring 35 plus. I understand.
I mean, we've been going three and out all year.
Yeah, no kidding.
Our defense.
That's amazing that the defense has been able to do that with the offense unable to score. At least they've held the ball a little bit. But, yeah, that's not what I want.
The other good thing is when you got that high-powered of an offense, the crowd is always into the game. And so when the defense goes out there, you know, they always got that extra energy from the crowd. And I think the way Durkin plays with rotating so many guys, I think, you know, I don't think that would be a problem personally. But, you know. But like I said, I think the big thing is, look, Lane Kiffin's probably going to go somewhere just because, let's just face it, there's six, seven, eight other SEC programs where if you're going to retire or you're going to go somewhere, you're going to be at such a huge advantage than where you're at now. And, you know, it's unfortunate for Ole Miss, you know, they're in Mississippi and it's just not, you know, it's not technically a great state regarding that. But, I mean, you know.
Oxford ain't Starkville, though. I mean, there are different places over there. So, all right, yeah,
I like Ole Miss.
Yep. Hey, we got to run, Dan.
Anyway, appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, no. I totally think Lane Kiffin as Plan A makes sense if that's where you are. You know, I just wonder if it's as easy to poach him as some people think.
Yeah.
You know, but hey, make him your best offer. I mean, I don't need to be sold on the reasons why it would work.
Me too.
You know, at Auburn for Lane Kiffin. I wonder if it's that simple.
All right, we got time for a couple of more calls. Cliff is up next. Hey, Cliff.
Hey, bud.
Hey, how are y'all doing tonight?
Doing all right. Good to hear from you.
Great. Yeah. I just think it's so funny here. We're debating whether Lane's going to leave Ole Miss, and then the Vandy game is such a big game for Auburn. It's just crazy how the SEC is now.
Vandy's fighting for their playoff lives.
That's right
now.
That is crazy.
Well, Auburn debating whether or not they want Ole Miss's coach is not new. Right, like that's. I feel like that's a familiar.
Like
that's a familiar conversation we've had before.
No doubt. The whole Vandy thing is just unbelievable for me. I love what they've done, and God, I think where Hugh would be now if we'd gotten Pavia. Mm.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I don't know.
No
maybe
kidding.
He'd have screwed that up too. So I don't know.
It would have been tough, I guess, for him to let. Pavia's coaches come with him and call plays. I just don't know.
I tell you what, give me a great quarterback and a suspect coach over a genius coach and a bad quarterback every day of the you know what's better.
That's what we talked about yesterday, Dan. Was who is the next quarterback with his offensive coordinator that you can find? Yeah. That's worked pretty well, hasn't it?
I was just gonna say, what's Belichick's record without Brady? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he's the greatest coach ever. It's what's his record?
That Krill, the old New Mexico coach, he's done pretty good with Pavia.
Yeah, and Tim Best is his guy that's a play caller. He was there with him as well. I mean, you look at Oklahoma's got John Mattern as offensive coordinator. I mean, it's worked at a few places.
Yeah. Well, I got to ask both of you guys, if there was a gun to your head right now, who would you want for this job?
Who do you want, or who do you think is going to get it?
No. Who do you think we could get? Would be your first get?
I think Auburn can get quite a few different guys. What I don't know.
Yeah, but Bill, who's your guy? Who's your guy, Bill? You're old like me. You've been.
Well, I mean, look. I mean, if I could get him, I have no problem with Lane at all.
Yeah.
But
can I give you like a four instead of a one?
Because, I mean, I think John Sumrall, everything I've heard about him sounds like he would be a guy that he'd love to be here, and I think he'd be a really good fit. I don't know him. I've never met him. Kenny Dillingham, I've met him. I think that could work.
Drink?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, although I just wonder, has he got the kind of edge that that John Cohen was talking
about.
He's
got an edge.
Oh, I know he does. I think that's why I said the kind.
I don't know. My list would probably. I mean, if you told me, like, okay, with Lane Kiffin sort of as a separate conversation, Eli Drinkwitz, Kenny Dillingham, and John Sumrall as three of the
I don't mind Brent Key either. Brent Key, somebody just mentioned.
Alex Golish at South Florida has SEC experience. I've heard people mentioning James Franklin. I'm not totally sold on that, but he has – James Franklin has a more impressive resume than any football coach Auburn's ever hired.
He does.
Yeah. You know, there's something about – I've been intrigued by Brent Key. He's from Alabama.
Yep.
He's old, kind of that old school, tough. I just think he would fit so well with Auburn. And the one great thing about him, he's beaten Georgia. And I love that. And he hates Georgia.
Yeah, that he does.
Okay, but hold on. Success against a rival, I think one of the lessons of the Hugh Freeze experiment is success against Alabama or Georgia is nice. It's down the list of reasons to hire a coach. Yep. Hugh Freeze had beaten Alabama a couple times. It turned out that was not all that important.
No, not anymore. Well, and I think 4th and 31 sort of finished that. Let's get to Jeremy before we get to our bottom of the hour break. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, bud.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Look, if Lane Kiffin was the lock that everybody thinks they are, that everybody thinks he is, Alabama would have paid him $20 million ago instead of Kalen DeBoer.
I don't disagree with that, Jeremy. That's a really good point.
Lane Kiffin is good. He lost to Georgia this year because he couldn't get a stop on defense.
Lane Kiffin is a great offensive coach, a great play caller. Yes, indeed.
And then, the whole idea that coaches don't leave here, you can run down the list. Gene Chizik left for the Texas job. You know, Muschamp left twice. We went through unlimited strings of Bobby Petrino and how many other offensive coordinators over the years. The idea that guys don't voluntarily leave is just not true.
Head coaches don't usually, but...
No, well, it's because they're not here and successful long
that's
enough
right.
to voluntarily leave. That's an entirely different thing. You want all your coaches to be stable. You also want your coaches to be good enough that everyone else wants them.
That is great. That's exactly right.
And you want them going on and you know, hopefully other people are trying to come in and poach your coaches. That's what you want. I would not oppose Lane Kiffin. Don't get me wrong. I think he's a fantastic coach, and I actually think he would fit in well here. But any idea that he is a lock, no matter how much money you throw, if you just throw enough money at the guy, he's a lock and will win national titles 2 out of 3 years. That's just not how it's going to work.
Good stuff, Jeremy. Appreciate it. We got to get to Jake Crane.
Yep, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Jake joins us on the other side. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive. All right, so...
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final 20 minutes here on this Tuesday. And sorry, we're a little late getting to him, but we appreciate being able to get a little time from our good friend Jake Crane of Crane & Company. Hey, Jake, how you doing, man?
Man, doing great, guys. Just got my 9-month-old, soon-to-be 10-month-old, in the walkie running around the house right now. So just trying to keep an eye on her and do this. But excited for tonight, man. New playoff rankings are coming out.
Yeah, Jake, it's been a busy last couple of days here at Auburn, and you followed the Hugh Freeze era from before he was hired. When we would talk about potential coaching candidates both after Gus Malzahn and after Brian Harsin, and Hugh Freeze's name came up. You obviously followed things very closely during the Hugh Freeze era up until the end. And now that Auburn's closed the book, I'm curious, What do you think went wrong?
What happened?
What comes to mind as sort of the most important things that went wrong for Hugh Freeze as Auburn's head coach?
Well, you know, first off, it's as somebody, and I'm always going to root for the head coach at Auburn, whether I liked to hire, wanted to hire, or didn't like to hire. It's a huge letdown. It's a huge disappointment. I think everybody agrees on that. I would say, starting off, if I had to pinpoint the main thing, is that you missed at quarterback 3 years in a row. Like, it's really, really hard to be really good on offense or good enough on offense at this level without a guy at quarterback that can function at a high level. You know, you're now hearing reports of he didn't want to go after Diego Pavia because he wanted to give Peyton Thorne another year. And then you go out, and when you have to have it, you don't get a proven guy. You get a guy that was fired four games in. Mm-hmm. And if you want to know really how far behind Jackson Arnold really was, he had more playing time coming into this year, important playing time, than Ty Simpson did at Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And look at the difference of the type player. And you got to give the coaches a lot of credit, but you can't miss it. You can't be a quarterback guru and an offensive guru and miss at QB every single year. And I think that just kind of waterfalled to the rest of the team. I think the biggest thing wasn't even scheme, to be honest with you, because, guys, I've lived it. I've seen really average schemes look amazing because of the personnel.
How great was the scheme? Jake, how great was the scheme in 2010?
Oh, like, it was so great. Cam Newton, go forward on any down that matters, that short yardage.
Yeah.
Like, and again, you still have to call the plays. You still got to get the guy ready. But the whole goal is evaluation, and that's the even sadder part is Auburn evaluated really well at some other positions, but you missed on the main one.
Mm-hmm.
You can't save the person if you don't fix the heart. You may have a great knee replacement, but if your heart doesn't work, the body doesn't work, and that's what I think sunk them.
Well, now that it is indeed sunk, Auburn moving on, John Cohen saying yesterday he'd like to have someone in place as soon as possible after the Iron Bowl. How feasible is that?
I mean, again, it depends on the candidate and what they're mm-hmm. doing. It's feasible, but it eliminates a decent amount
right.
of guys. I mean, you know, John Summerall, obviously Tulane's out of it in the Group of Five race. I think, you know, there's a possibility. We talked on our show that you could have a handshake agreement and really maybe even get something down on paper here in a couple weeks, to be honest with you, and the Iron Bowl isn't that far away either. But it just depends on the candidate, whether it's, you know, John Sumrall, Kenny Dillingham. You know, doesn't look like Arizona State is going to make the college football playoff.
Right.
And from what I've heard, he's actually listening, which shocks me. I didn't even think he'd listen. But no, I think it's feasible. It just, that's going to eliminate some guys that are more proven, but you're probably not getting those guys anyway.
I think that's a commentary on the uncertain future of the Big 12 more than anything else. The thought that a guy at his alma mater at 35 years old who grew up in the greater Phoenix area would listen if a superpower came calling, because it's probably the best thing for his career.
Well, I'll say this, Dan, though. Like, some guys just want to go where it's the best. They got to know.
Yep.
They have to know. Like, even if it's at even a guy like Brent Key at Georgia Tech, who's at his alma mater,
mm-hmm.
again, at the end of the day, some of these guys don't want to look back when they're older and they're out of it and say, man, I had a chance to go coach at high level in the SEC and really see where I stack up when I have all the resources at a place that loves it as much as anybody else. Some guys just personally, and ego drives pretty much everybody. That's why I think he is listening, and why I think he'd consider it. Those odds that came out early weren't there for, you know, they don't make big mistakes most of the time.
Let me ask you about a conversation we've been having for a while on the drive, which is there are folks who believe plan A for Auburn should be you make Lane Kiffin the biggest offer you can and see what happens. You know, I wonder, it's not so much what Lane Kiffin would do given Auburn's resources. I'm more curious about, does Auburn offer enough now to lure him away from a place where he's winning and he's maybe put down some roots? What do you make of Lane Kiffin as a potential candidate for Auburn?
Look, if LSU and Florida weren't open, I'd think there'd be a decent chance. I'm just not seeing it. I don't know if Lane's going to go anywhere, to be honest, because I think sometimes, and I've said this on the show before, people forget Lane's already done the big-time job thing. He coached the Raiders when he was like 12. It was like that Rookie of the Year movie. And then he went to USC and Tennessee. Like, he's done that, and now he's at Ole Miss, where if he wins 9 games in a season, you know, they give him 3 keys to the city. I mean, he could rob a bank in Oxford right now and wouldn't even need a gun. They just give him the money when he asks for it. So, look, I don't think you'd be stupid to call and just see if there was anything there. I don't think there would be. But in a hypothetical where he would want to come to Auburn, yeah, I mean, that guy's he's top shelf liquor.
Yeah, but he's somebody that, again, doesn't fit in that you'd be able to have him before signing period, December 3rd, yeah. Even before the portal opens. So, I mean, I think that's something that is not an insignificant factor in there. But I'll say this, Jake, I feel pretty good that Auburn feels like they're in as good a position, perhaps better than some of its some of the schools that they will be competing against. I think Auburn financially is in very solid shape to be able to make offers and to show what they can do NIL-wise to potential candidates.
Yeah, well, compared to LSU right now, I mean, heck, I'm in great shape financially. It's after what they spend, and then you have the governor of the state admonishing the AD, and then you got a new president coming. It's just and Louisiana's not a rich state. Like, make no mistake, again, they can put money together, but that's a huge buyout they're paying Brian Kelly. So, I mean, again, I am not doubting Auburn's ability to financially be in it. It's just, I don't think Lane's leaving one, and if he does, to me it would make more sense to go to LSU. Like, why? Like, LSU owns their own state. It's just them and the Saints. We know how you can recruit at that place. We know they're a big-time brand. That would be the destination I could see Lane at, and he'd fit right in with the Cajuns down there.
Yeah, for the money LSU's paying Brian Kelly, Auburn could probably turn Beard Eve's Coliseum into the Sphere. Right,
Auburn could look like Dubai.
Yeah, you could build a sphere there in the middle of campus. I know there's like football games this weekend, Jake, but we just fired a coach this weekend, so we're gonna do a little hot board. Eli Drinkwitz, I want to throw his name out there. Former Auburn assistant, guy winning at the SEC. I think unlike Ole Miss, I think Missouri's a place where even if you've got it rolling, are you ever going to have the kind of athletes that can win you the SEC? Are you ever going to recruit the kind of team that can win college football playoff games?
Well, and even if you do, will people notice before you get there? I mean, it's like that's what seems to be the craziest thing about Missouri is you just sort of go, oh, yeah, and then there's Missouri. Oh, they've only lost a game.
Still doesn't feel like a conference game.
Always the bridesmaid. Yeah, always the bridesmaid. The thing with Eli is he's obviously done an incredible job at Missouri. I think he'd do well at Auburn, but it just kind of feels like the same thing, right? Then they kind of feel a little bit like the same thing, like the same type of personality, and it's an offensive guy. And listen, I get it. I don't think just because one thing didn't work, you don't try it again. I think you try and go hire the best guy. But it's just my gut tells me Auburn needs somebody that has got a lot of gumption about them. Not fake, not, you know, performative, but, like, got a lot – because even Lane, say what you want about Lane, but, I mean, Lane is talking trash to players after the game on the other team.
Hey, John Cohen said – John Cohen mentioned edge a few times.
Yeah, and we need some edge. We don't listen, I'm all for it again. I want to – you want to create great people and great players. But that doesn't mean everybody's just got to be, hey, kumbaya all the time. We need somebody that's a little bit upset.
I would agree with that. I would point out, you know, Eli's team had enough edge to talk trash during the coin flip and overtime this year.
Look, great point. I'm not saying Eli doesn't have it, but again, I don't know. I think he should be in the discussion, obviously. And I think you got a much better chance of getting Drinkwitz than you do Lane. It's just. Man, that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah,
it'd be a lot of outside zone.
It would be familiar compared to some other moves and probably more Malzahn-like than some of the other moves, although it's tough to find.
Let me ask you this, though, Dan. Would you think he'd bring Prabula with him?
I mean, that's an interesting yeah, thought, isn't
that
it?
Is. I mean,
cool.
That is.
You can.
That's what we were talking about it a while ago. It's like, hey, it's been very, very good if you can find a quarterback that you can bring along or bring their offensive coordinator with.
It's like my brother said on the show. Hey, who's playing QB for Washington State this year?
Yeah.
It turns out it's like the worst guy they've had in the last 3 years.
Is there anyone of the? I mean,
who? Let me ask you this, because one of the things that that we keep hearing is, man, they're concerned about this coach or that coach that all the players would leave if you hire them. Who do you feel would be a really good fit that would be able to come in, have the personality to try to get the players to at least stick around and see how things are going to go? Who do you like right now?
Well, I think it's always easier to get guys to stick when it's a big name.
Right.
So like Lane Kiffin, a lot of guys would stick around for that, I would promise you. But if we're going saying, all right, it's not Lane Kiffin or some huge name, you know, somebody that – the question then becomes, though, like, what if it is Eli Drinkwitz? Does he keep Durkin, which therefore keeps a lot of the players there because Eli's an offensive guy? That's the thing with Summerall.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can have Summerall and Durkin. They're both defensive guys, and Summerall, I think, is younger than DJ.
Yes.
So DJ would be the DC, and you hired another guy when he was in the running. But what happens at what? Again, you got to play all these hypotheticals out. What if Durkin wins out?
Yeah. If he wins out, how do you not retain him?
Oh, yeah. No,
how do you not?
Well,
yeah.
Well, it's an even bigger question. If you're going to retain DJ Durkin as the head coach and he wins out, if Derek Nix is calling the plays, how do you not retain Derek Nix? Like, how much of the staff does stay the same? Like, but I don't know. I would rather go get the best head coach possible than worry about guys leaving, especially in today's age.
That's
a long-term play.
Yeah, and we've seen it way too many times. What I'm a proponent of is get the right guy and then let him pick his staff, because I try to keep that guy. And if they don't work, if they don't have chemistry, then it's not going to work.
No, without a doubt. And if you're a new head coach at a place like Auburn, like this is my big shot. I need my guy.
Absolutely.
I don't want to be like, oh well, you can come, but this guy's got to stay here.
Nah.
You know, that already creates harder for that relationship to work just naturally. And you put it in that competitive of an environment, and it's like times a thousand.
Yep. Well, it is. It is indeed really interesting, and thank goodness after that show last week offensively that we've can at least not be having to keep staring at that too much. Jake,
you know, I literally think you could play Auburn's offensive just the offensive clips of Auburn this year, and we could get every answer out of every terrorist if we just put it on a loop. Like, in a black tie.
No, there are
for 30 minutes.
There are conventions that have we've signed things to ban that. Actually, I think we've promised not to.
Like,
yeah,
that would be, there you go. The FBI, it's easy. Just do that.
International law. Great stuff, Jake.
Dan, show them every last drive to win the game. Auburn had on
2 minute drill.
God.
Show them the 2 minute drills. No. Oh, no, they'll tell you whatever you need. All right, great stuff, Jake.
Really appreciate it. Jake Crane joining us as he does each week. Crane and Company, you can check that out. We need to get to our final wrap here on the Tuesday Drive.
This is Martha Hank with the Food Bank of East Heaven.
And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Winding things down here on the Tuesday Drive, our thanks to Jake Crane for joining us this hour, Andy Burcham in hour number one. There was football practice today, the first under DJ Durkin. Ashton Daniels was the first guy out at quarterback. Thought it was interesting. Mason Murphy was with the first group at center, with Too Tall Miller at right tackle. We'll see if those hold up through the week.
Should have Jason tomorrow?
Yeah. Jason Caldwell will join us at the beginning of the show tomorrow.
He's been busy this week. We'll talk with him a little bit.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Fun show today. Appreciate our guests and all of our callers. We're back with you tomorrow. That's going to do it for today, though. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.